All eyes turned to the speaker. Edward Houseman was short, stout, and very well-dressed. At 41 years of age, 37 and a half standard, Merlin automatically translated mentally, he was the youngest man in the council chamber after Caleb himself. He was also, almost certainly, the wealthiest. It was his foundries which had produced the artillery and the copper sheathing for the galleons Caleb and his captains had used to smash the recent attack upon the kingdom. In fact, his shipyards had built half a dozen of those galleons as well. Houseman was not officially a member of the Royal Council, or even of Parliament. Neither, for that matter, was Ryan Mikael, the sharp-eyed and almost equally wealthy man sitting next to him. Mikael was at least twice Houseman's age, but the two of them were business partners of long standing, and Mikael's textile manufactories and rope walks had produced virtually all of the canvas for those same galleon sails, not to mention most of the cordage for their standing and running rigging.
"Unless you and Master Mikael intend to build ships gratis, we're still going to have to figure out how to pay for them," Ironhill pointed out. "And without access to Desnare's gold mines, we can't just coin money whenever we need it."
"Oh, I'm well aware of that, Alvino. And no, I'm not planning on building them gratis. Sorry."
Houseman grinned, and his eyes twinkled.
"Neither Ryan nor I have any intention of gouging the treasury, of course. That'd be an outstandingly stupid thing for either of us to be doing at this particular moment. But we do have to manage to pay our own workers and our suppliers, you know, not to mention showing at least a modest profit for ourselves and our partners and shareholders. What I was getting at, though, was that as long as the Navy can keep merchant shipping moving, the balance of trade is going to provide quite a healthy cash flow, and under the circumstances, I don't see me or any of my fellow ship owners complaining if the Crown decides to tack on a few extra duties and taxes on the Navy's behalf so that it can keep trade moving."
"I'm not as certain as you seem to be about that cash flow, Edward." Ironhill's expression was far more somber than Houseman's. "If I were the group of four, the very first thing I'd do would be to demand that all of Haven's and Howard's harbors be closed to our shipping immediately." He shrugged. "They have to be as aware as we are that the kingdom's prosperity hinges entirely on our merchant marine. Surely they're going to do everything they can to cripple it."
Grey Harbor frowned, and some of the others went so far as to nod in sober agreement. Howard and Haven, the two main continents of Safehold, contained at least 80% of the planetary population. The kingdoms, principalities, and territories in which that population lived were the markets upon which Karras's merchant marine and manufactories had built the kingdom's wealth. If those markets were taken away, Karizian prosperity would be doomed. But Houseman only chuckled.
"The group of four can demand whatever they want, Alvino. I doubt they're going to be stupid enough to issue that particular decree, but then they've already done some spectacularly stupid things, so it's always possible I'm wrong. In fact, I rather hope I am and that they do try it. Even if they do, though, it's not going to happen."
"No?" Ironhill sat back in his chair. "Why?"
"Why do I wish they would? Or why do I think it's not going to happen even if they do?"
"Both."
"I wish they would because giving orders you know won't be obeyed is one of the best ways I know to destroy your own authority. And the reason an order like that wouldn't be obeyed is that no one in Haven or Howard can possibly provide the goods those markets require. I don't mean just that they can't provide them as cheaply as we can, Arvino, although that's certainly true as well. What I mean is that they literally don't have the capacity to provide them at all. And that even if they had the capacity, or developed it as quickly as possible, they still wouldn't have the ability to transport those goods at anything like the economies of cost we can achieve."
Houseman shook his head.
"That's one of the minor details the group of four left out of their calculations, actually. I'm astonished Duquesne didn't warn the other three what would happen if they succeeded in what they had in mind." Would it really have been that bad for them, Edward?
Grey Harbour asked, and Houseman shrugged.
It would have been bad, Regis. Maybe not as bad as I think it would have been, I suppose, if I'm going to be fair. After all, my perspective is bound to be shaped by my own business interests and experience. Still, I think most people, including a lot of people right here in the kingdom, don't understand how thoroughly we've come to dominate the world's markets. There was a reason Trinair chose King Harald's supposed ambition to control the entire world's merchant traffic as his pretext for supporting Hector and Narmin against us. He knows there are plenty of people in Dolar, Desnair, Halshong, even the Republic, who deeply resent our domination of the carrying trade. And quite a few of them, the smarter ones, to be honest, resent their own growing dependency on our manufactories as well. All of that's true, but their resentment can't change the reality, and the reality is that better than half, probably closer to two-thirds, actually, of the world's merchant galleons fly the Carisian flag. And another reality is that somewhere around two-thirds of the manufactured goods those galleons transport are made right here in Caris as well. And a third reality is that it takes four times as long and costs five or six times as much to transport the same goods to their ultimate destinations over land as it does to ship them by sea. If, of course, it's even possible to ship them over land in the first place. It's just a bit difficult to get something from Sittermark to Taro by wagon, after all. There's this little thing called the Taro Channel in the way.